more fist pump time on the Fan Cam Twitch and YouTube. Sean Shreve, RJ Choppy, Cowboys Insider Bobby Belt. We got Peyton and Caitlin in the back live on all the different ways to get the program loaded today with Mike McCarthy. He's been delivering here on the show. Diego Pavia, the Vandy quarterback for the Commodores and the Longhorns. Tomorrow, Matt Maiocco at 9:20 from San Fran, but the legendary voice of NBC Football Night in America, the Olympic coverage, is joining us right now on DFW Sports Station. It's Mike Tirico on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Guys, good morning. How you doing?
We're doing well. A little bit of a little bit of a circus around here. Don't know if you've heard, been keeping up.
It's hard to avoid. Although I avoid most of the chatter on TV in the mornings about it. But, no, it's been hard to avoid. I was down there in the Metroplex on Tuesday. The World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth had an honor dinner. They have the Mallon Award they give out every year. About 1,200 folks were there. Liz Brailsford and the group do a wonderful job with that organization. And Clark Hunt, the owner of the Chiefs, who, as everybody knows, so prevalent in the Dallas area and the community. He was honored with the award, and I did a interview with him on stage and spoke the dinner. So I was in town on Tuesday morning. I just landed, actually, at DFW and listened to you guys with Jerry just to see if there are any fireworks to follow the fireworks of a week ago. So I arrived just in time to hear you guys all huggy and kissy, and everything was all good.
Mike, it's a give and take, right? There was an article that came out about the tours that are being given.
You live
in all the different facilities throughout all the years. The give and the positive is it creates the excitement. The Cowboys are the top story for 25 years, despite not sniffing a conference championship game. Do you believe in the negative in that a lot of these things adding up cause distractions that keep them from their ultimate goal?
There weren't distractions to win 12 games the last 3 years, right?
Good point.
Are you telling me it's a distraction when Green Bay comes in and stuns you in the playoff, or is it a distraction when you can't get that last snap off in the San Francisco game a couple years ago?
So
that was the difference in it? I mean, yes, it is different. Perhaps it has a cumulative effect on players who haven't been here before. But you know what you sign up for when you sign up with the Cowboys. Jerry has openly said on a regular basis, publicity is good. Sometimes it's not great publicity, but all publicity is good. He subscribes to that theory, and I think you said it very well. It has kept Dallas at the top of the food chain when they have not been at the top of the food chain in terms of wins and losses and championships, especially for the last quarter century. So this is what you sign up for. You probably make more money and are in a higher profile position in Dallas than you would be if you plied your trade in Jacksonville or Glendale or other outposts around the league. It's just a fact. So it didn't hold the team back from winning divisions and winning 12 games. Is there a cumulative effect? I'm sure there is. Well, you just have to then maximize it best you can and not make it a distraction.
Well said. Jerry believes one of his principles is, look, this fishbowl elevates everyone, right? This fishbowl, you practice in front of people and people are watching you work out in Oxnard, California. That elevates. I want to be on Hard Knocks. And we try to go back at Jerry and say, well, not everyone. Sometimes the pressure can crack certain people. You've covered athletes your entire life. What do you feel about Jerry's belief that, you know, just all this pressure is good?
So before, and the Cowboys have been a bit of a unicorn and an outlier in this. And I think, I'll answer your question specifically, then I'll make the general point. I think if you can handle the pressure around the Cowboys Monday to Saturday, you can handle whatever shows up on Sunday or in a playoff game or on a higher stage. I believe that. Used to be a time where certain guys couldn't play in New York, especially in baseball. I think that theory has moved around the country now to the high-profile franchises, right? Because you can have the biggest stars in the league all across the country. So I think the pressure and the celebrity factor follows athletes now, whereas it used to only get it in one of those northeast cities where there was just a harder edge and more tabloid coverage of teams. But I think you know what you're signing up for. Like I said before, it's fine. Look, you go through these weeks in Dallas. You go through Oxnard. You go through all this stuff this week. You go through the stuff that was percolating around this show. You think for a second all the people who play for the Cowboys weren't asked, hey, did you hear the Jerry dust up on the radio with the guys? Right? That's just part of what this is. And it should, in some ways, harden you. And if it's not for you, you shouldn't be there. Now, that doesn't mean it's the perfect place. Right now, Kansas City has the right mix of everything. They are as high-profile team as any in the league. Their national ratings are higher than Cowboy ratings right now. But when you go to Kansas City, you still feel like you're kind of sheltered from things a little bit.
Yeah.
Dallas chooses to be out front. It's why Cowboys travel everywhere. Every place you go, the Steelers and the Cowboys are the two franchises that never play road games because their fans are everywhere. And it's just part of, life is a series of trade-offs. This is the give and take. You want to be a Cowboy, you want to play for America's team, you're going to have more distractions than if you were a Cleveland Brown.
Yep.
Mike Tirico, Sunday Night Football, joining us here, 105.3 The Fan. Are you more surprised the Cowboys are 3-3 or the way they've gotten to 3-3?
Good question. Maybe the way is probably better to look at it. I mean, because really, you look at it, they've beaten one decent team, and that's Pittsburgh. And Cleveland's not good. The Giants, they're not good either right now. I thought there were more pieces there. I thought the Giants were better after we saw them against Cincinnati, and the offense was just struggling. But against Philadelphia, they didn't look good at all. Dallas has beaten one good team, and that's Pittsburgh. And if not for Dak not carrying out the fake and standing there to fall on the ball at the goal line when a Landon Roberts flew over the pile, they would have lost that game too.
Yeah.
So I don't think the team has been as good as it can be. What are the issues? You can't run the ball. I mean, we could parse this in 60 different ways. When your longest run is 13 yards and it's October 25th, that's bad.
Hmm.
And then on the other side of the ball, just this simple, simple stuff. When only one team has given up more points than you, that's bad. There are a variety of reasons. Obviously, you take the two best edge rushers off the team. You take a corner who had all those picks last year off the team because of injury. You're not getting the turnovers. You've got the natural defensive changeover when it goes one coordinator to another. These guys fit the scheme. Jerry kind of alluded to that with you guys. When you were asking about personnel and trade deadline, seller, buyer, there was like the back end buried in his answer, but I thought it was an interesting sentence out of that conversation that you all had with him on Tuesday. You start seeing, well, these players fit Dan Quinn's philosophy and approach. Maybe some of them aren't the best fit where they're learning how to fit Mike Zimmer's approach, all that.
Yeah.
So there are reasons, no doubt about it, but it's an average football team right now, exactly where they are record-wise, with only one good win in the first six games. And you need more than that to be there in January.
Mike Tirico, the play-by-play voice for Sunday Night Football, joining us here on 105 The Fan. So you guys just about a year ago had the Dallas-San Francisco game.
Yeah.
That was obviously a brutal showing for the Cowboys. It kind of turned into a pivot point for them.
Right.
When you look at where things are at now, just knowing back then and where the team was at in terms of their mentality about the 49ers and how much they were chasing them, how big of a boost do you sense that winning this game could be a psychological, boost for this Cowboys team right now that's struggling if they were able to finally beat San Francisco?
Oh, it would be huge. Remember the game after the big loss here was a Monday night game. I'm almost sure it was at SoFi.
Chargers, yep.
Against the Chargers, right? And Aubrey kicks a field goal in the last few minutes of the game, win by three, then the bye week. And then the team takes off. There was a loss there, Philly, I think. But then there's like that run. We went all the way to mid-December winning games, right? One loss from the bye till middle of December.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this could be a huge pivot. Here's what I think is bigger. This game could be a head-to-head against the team you're fighting for a wild card spot with.
Mm.
And that might matter the way this NFC is bunched. I think the NFC North is good. I don't know if Chicago's going to have the staying power. I think the other three teams will. Washington and Philly look okay. Washington looks okay right now. But look, any one of those teams can be beatable if Dallas can get healthy and get its act going. You might be battling the San Franciscos and the Seattles and the Rams for that last wild card spot. So I think in addition to turning the season around and getting good momentum going, I think this is a huge game for the head-to-head part of it because you both might be in that same spot coming week 17 and 18.
Mike, has San Fran taken a legitimate step backwards, or do you believe that they're still scary?
I don't think they're as scary when they're lining up Chris Conley, Jacob Cowing, and Ricky Pearsall at wide receiver.
Yes.
You know, just the fact. I mean, you know, let's start taking the top three receivers off the team and the offensive player of the year in the league.
Yeah.
When you take Christian McCaffrey out of the lineup for the first half of the season, you take away more than a running back and stats. You take away the ability to disguise personnel. How many plays that McCaffrey is split out or you move him in the formation that attracts attention, and then Deebo Samuel beats it, or Ayuk gets one-on-one coverage, or Kittle gets down the slot. Now you take some of those pieces out, and now Ayuk's gone for the season. Who knows what McCaffrey's going to be if he comes back after the bye. And you've got a lot of the key pieces of this thing out. Yes, Jordan Mason, the running back, has come in, and he's second to Derrick Henry in rushing yards and in rushing attempts. So you're getting the production stat-wise, but you're not getting the production in terms of offensive flexibility and a dynamic offense. So I don't think this is the team that we saw last year. And with the Ayuk injury and the uncertainty of what McCaffrey's going to look like if he comes back after the bye week for them, I don't know if we're going to see them at full strength at any point during the season. So they're not as lethal and scary on offense as they were that got into the Super Bowl last year.
Mike, what's your take on Brock Purdy and, you know, signing him, not signing him? There's a lot of narrative around, you know, is he a system guy or is he a really good quarterback? Where do you fall and how do you look at narratives like that about a player who just wins games and puts up numbers but isn't a high draft pick?
Would Patrick Mahomes be great in Jacksonville or in, I'm trying to think of a team that has a, with the Giants. The Giants are good because the Giants offense is struggling here. Would Patrick Mahomes be great there? I don't know. I know he's great in Kansas City system, and he learned in the system for a year and grew. I think if you took Patrick Mahomes somewhere else with an offense that's not the mind of Andy Reid, he'd still be very good, just like Brady was very good when you moved him to Tampa. But who knows if it's the perfect fit, right? Sometimes the system is there, and then it morphs and melds to the talent of the individual. So that's my way of saying I think Brock Purdy's a good quarterback. I do. So here's an anecdote that I think will answer the question better than I can. We talked to DeMarvion Overshown yesterday, I think it was. My days are running together here. I think we talked to him yesterday just in preparation for the game, and he played Brock Purdy four times at Iowa State when Overshown was at UT. And you know, he went 3-1 against him. And he said from his freshman year, when Texas had everything to play for and Iowa State had very little to play for in terms of postseason and Big 12 and all that stuff, he said the guy was a gamer and he was a competitor, and every year you could see he got better. So I'll take it from the guys who were on the turf inside the lines playing against him. I've always liked what I've seen from him skill-wise, ability-wise. Sure, the system helps him. But if the system's still going to be here, then you want that guy here. Otherwise, Trey Lance would be playing or somebody else would be playing. Brandon Allen, who's their backup now, Joshua Dobbs. Lance, who was here a couple of years ago, obviously. So I think he's a guy who you obviously pay. Now, do you pay him as the highest paid player in the NFL? No. But there's a $40 million Daniel Jones type deal out there that this guy is more than deserving, if not more. I don't get lost in the pennies of the cap in the comparative. Is he the number one paid guy? Probably not, but should he be here for a long time as their quarterback? Yes. And that means that their window is going to change when he gets paid that much, just like it's impacted Dallas's roster construction with Dak and CD getting paid what they're getting paid.
They continue to absolutely dominate. Sunday Night Football is averaging 22 million viewers across NBC and Peacock. Primetime's number one show on pace for an unprecedented 14th straight year in doing it. The great Mike Tirico, we love having you on. Thanks for listening to what could have been our final show last Tuesday. And have a great call.
Very, very well done. You, by the way, just as a guy who's on your side of the mic for most of my life, I thought you guys handled everything really, really like well, like perfectly, like well done, well played, all the way around. That's what makes your show good, is when people listen because they don't know what's going to happen next. And good on you guys, and continued success going forward.
Thank you, Mike. That's a goosebump compliment coming from you. Have a great call. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man. Be well. Have a great weekend. Enjoy yourself.
Mike Tirico on the D&M Leasing Hotline. All right, now let's figure out who's actually not going to play for them to see how much hope we should actually have. Matt Maiocco, San Francisco insider, joins us for the 49ers scoop after this. 9:40, hopefully a Mavs crosstalk with a KMC masterpiece. Bassick will decide. They're at Buffalo Wild Wings in Grand Prairie. Right now here on Sean, RJ, and Bobby, the guest list continues. And he's been cool enough to join us yet again on the FanCam, Twitch, and Zoom. San Francisco insider heading into year number 30. Ooh. Matt Maiocco from NBC here on the home of the Cowboys. Good morning, man. Thank you for being the only writer or media person willing to wake up this early in California with us.
Is that so? I was the last pick.
No, you're the first.
You're actually the first.
I was Brock Purdy. Is that what you're saying?
You know, speaking of, what a segue by you. What are the fans saying about re-signing him? Mike Tirico just threw out like a Daniel Jones type deal, and I'm like, I don't think he's going to go ahead and take that. What do the fans want to do with Brock Purdy's future?
Well, I mean, up until, I guess, Sunday against Kansas City, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion that he was going to get something very significant. Let's put it this way. Right now, he's, I believe, the 86th highest paid quarterback in the NFL. He's like the 54th highest paid player on the 49ers. He's going to jump up significantly. And so, you know, he's not going to get the $60 million of Dak Prescott. But, I mean, I would think, you know, somewhere in that $45 to $55 million range. Now, the season has to play out, and we have to see, you know, how it transpires, if the 49ers make the playoffs, how far the 49ers go in the playoffs. But when you look at some of the quarterbacks who are up in that $50 million range, you know, they don't have the postseason success that Brock Purdy has had in a very short period of time. You know, they don't have the accolades that Brock Purdy has achieved in his very short time as a quarterback. So, I mean, the 49ers are prepared to pay him. It's just a matter of, you know, what exactly that number is. You know, is it 40, 45, 50? I don't know. And, you know, at this point, I would kind of put the over under it. I put the over under at 50 because salaries are increasing, and that still doesn't put him in the top. You know, he doesn't put him at the very top. So he's going to get paid, no question about it. And then down the line, you know, when that money kicks in on the salary cap, it won't be next year, not the big money anyway, and probably not the year after that. At some point, you know, that will probably coincide with the time when some of the high-priced veteran players on the 49ers it's time for them to move on and other young players will come in.
Matt, who do you think is actually playing and missing for this game on the San Fran side?
I think that Debo Samuel will play, George Kittle will play, and then you know, Christian McCaffrey remains on injured reserve. He will not play. I don't think Juwan Jennings will play. And then, of course, on the defensive side, Dre Greenlaw, he's on injured reserve or PUP, so he won't play either. So if in the second half of that game against Kansas City, Juwan Jennings, who when he started in place of Debo Samuel when he was injured for a couple of games, in two games he became like, you know, the top three wide receiver in the league as far as yards receiving. So he's been out. For this would be his second game, assuming that he's out, and I think he will be. Debo Samuel played four snaps. He had pneumonia, ended up going into the hospital for two nights. Not quite, you know, jury duty, you know, mind you, but still, you know, he was unavailable. And then Brandon Ayuk sustained a torn ACL and MCL right before halftime. So they played the second half of that game without any of their top three
wide receivers. So that meant Ricky Pearsall, their first round draft pick, who, as you know, was shot in the chest on August 31st. 50 days later, he was activated. They expected to play him, maybe like 15 to 20 snaps. He ended up playing 76% of the Friars' offensive snaps because they had no other choice. So they were shorthanded in that game against Kansas City. And, the loss of McCaffrey certainly hurts them tremendously. They're hoping to get him back after the bye week. But still, even with the guys missing, it just hasn't seemed right. The offense isn't clicking the way this offense has usually clicked this time of year.
Matt Maiocco from NBC Sports Bay Area joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Matt, so Dallas sitting at 3-3. The discussion in the last couple weeks has been, well, you are what your record says you are. And I think a lot of people in Dallas feel like that's not an accurate portrayal of Dallas. They're not even a 3-3 team. There's something below that. They're in San Francisco. What is the sentiment or the feeling about that 3-4 49ers team? Is it, this about matches up with what we've seen? Or is the thought that, no, they really should be in a position to have a better record right now, and that's not totally reflective of what they've done?
Well, I would say, kind of both, is that they are 3-4, and that's what they've looked like. They've looked like a below 500 team. They just have had so many inadequacies in every facet of the game. The offense, they just can't score when they get into the red zone. They went from being the best touchdown scoring team in the red zone last year to this year being among the worst. And that's kind of, I was almost going to say it was inexplicable how they've dropped, but I hate to keep bringing up Christian McCaffrey, but that's a guy that scored 18 touchdowns in the red zone last year. And he did it running the ball. He did it catching passes out of the backfield. And then probably more importantly for the 49ers offense, you could say just having him out there draws coverage. I mean, he draws two defenders anywhere he goes. So that opens things up for other guys. So it's been offense, defense hasn't gotten off the field on third downs, a defense that was supposed to be, one of the bright spots of the team, kind of carry the team, has been simply middle of the pack. They're just middle of the pack, very average defense. And then special teams has been an absolute disaster with a major blunder or two or three in, I think, every game except for the opener. So when you say, 3-4, is that indicative of who they are? Absolutely. Now, the other side of that is they shouldn't be 3-4. They got a much better team than that. So, they should probably be 5-2. At this point, the game against the Vikings where they could have won, but not really. So that's a loss. And then the game against Kansas City where they were outclassed in that game. So this is a team that should be 5-2. The two games that they lost that they are beating themselves over the head about, they had a big second half lead against Arizona. They had a big second half lead against the Rams, and they let those things get away and they lost those division games.
Matt, I want to ask you about Kyle Shanahan because I saw this tweet about Brock Purdy talking about audibles and they don't really audible because everything's baked in, yada, yada, yada. And I went to the comments and it is nothing but Niner fans saying, and y'all call Kyle a genius and this is the same BS we've been talking about for years. Are there cracks with Kyle and the fan base?
It seems that way. Anecdotally, I would say yes. I have a difficult time kind of separating reality from social media comments. But I mean, the people who are just now learning that, this isn't a system based on audibles are, have they been 20 years behind the times? I mean, he didn't have audibles with Houston, with name every Atlanta. Spot, Washington, yeah. Atlanta. Yeah. So the offense is not the problem. Audibles are not the problem. There are part of this system. It's why 18 teams in the league or something crazy are running some version of this offense. The quarterback has all the answers baked into the play. And so, he has his hots. He has all the contingencies in the play. So it takes a lot off the plate of the quarterback to get to the line of scrimmage and not have to think about audibles. It's all part of the system. And you know, the system has been successful. And the reason the 49ers are struggling in the red zone isn't because they need to put more on the plate of the quarterback and just invent stuff and change their offense entirely. So I guess I don't get that. There's just a faction of fans, I think, that will just look for anything. You know, has Kyle Shanahan won the big one? Obviously not. Have they blown some big high profile games? Absolutely. And that goes back to the Super Bowl with the Falcons when he was the offensive coordinator. But are they, you know, you ask probably, you know, you ask 31 other, you know, defensive coaches or people around the league on a short list of play designers, systems, everything else, I would imagine that Kyle Shanahan is very, very high up on that list of offensive minds and how it's perceived or how he's perceived around the NFL.
Matt, what's your feeling on the game? I had a really hard time with it. Do you feel like the Cowboys can get out of their mess here, that San Fran is as susceptible as they've been versus Dallas over the years, or is that aura of invincibility and just dominance and toughness going to play out again Sunday night?
I just don't sense right now that the 49ers have that aura of invincibility. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's been a weird season. You know, it started really at the Super Bowl when, you know, Dre Greenlaw's leaving the sideline and tears his Achilles. It carries over into the offseason where, you know, McCaffrey was working on a contract behind the scenes. So that wasn't a big story, but Trent Williams holds out, Brandon Ayuk holds in, then McCaffrey gets injured and, oh, it's going to be 2 weeks. And then, you know, opening night comes along and he's inactive and hasn't played yet. And then, you know, the Pearsall incident that I talked about. I just kind of felt like watching training camp, it wasn't the same juice that they'd brought in the past. And I think it is, you know, people talk about the Super Bowl hangover. I think it's real. And not only the Super Bowl hangover, you're talking about a team that for three consecutive years played three high leverage postseason games every season. And so you're talking about a shortened off season. You're talking about each one of those seasons ended in extreme disappointment. I don't know, man. I just think that it's been a weird year. So I'm not saying the 49ers can't turn it around. I'm not saying that they can't turn it around on Sunday night, but I have no idea what to expect from the 49ers. Probably like you have no idea what to expect from the Dallas Cowboys. Now I'll say this. I mean, I think this is a huge game for both teams, you know, for Dallas, in a tougher division as far as the top goes. I mean, they cannot fall behind by, what would they fall behind by, two or three games, you know, potentially if they lose this game. For the 49ers, it makes a huge difference, I think, psychologically, whether they head into the bye week with a 4-4 record or a 3-5 record. Even if they're 3-5, I don't think Seattle's running away with the division. They'll probably lose Sunday to Buffalo, but it just, I don't know. It's had a weird feel to it this season with the 49ers.
I'll compliment you first and then insult you. That looks like a very nice background. RJ, what do you think that is out there? Is that a patio? I mean, that looks...
It does look like a patio. Is that... I don't know what that pattern is called in the wood.
Looks good, Matt. And then screw you for what looks like cold weather that you're enjoying while we got 90 out here.
90's great.
Well, you know what? I'm a California wimp. It's probably like 60... My guess is like 65 degrees.
It's not making it any better.
It's, you know, the sun hasn't come up yet. I haven't seen the sun yet.
Yeah.
But just kind of out of reflex, I wake up because you guys caught me within like, you know, 20 minutes. I set the alarm for 7 o'clock my time. I just automatically put on the hoodie and climb in here in front of the camera.
Just like us at work every day. Yeah. Thank you so much, man. You're the best. Enjoy the game.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Matt Maiocco from NBC here on 105.3 The Fan. Let's crosstalk a Mavs Clay crosstalk from Buffalo Wild Wings and Grand Prairie with KMC next.
Grimes is going to come in for Irving in the corner. Clay Thompson with a beautiful stroke and a three, and the Mavs by two.
All right, it's Mike Bassett Crosstalk as Sean Sharif is demanding I talk about the Mavericks by leading me to the water. You see how he did it? He's like, he teases the Mavs. Then he's like, come back with a Mavs highlight. All right, Sean, the Mavericks. What did you think of that? Hey, by the way, I'm going to start it off by this. Instead of talking to Sean, I'm going to talk to Choppy.
All right.
Choppy, yeah. I unfortunately did this, and after I did it, I regretted it. You ever say something, and then you're like, I probably shouldn't have said that.
Three times a day.
All right.
Hour. What do you think Mike's at then?
Three times a minute.
I went on with San Francisco radio.
All those douchebags?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, see, they called you guys out on the show, so they do not like you, and you do not like them.
Yeah.
No.
And I said, well, I know yesterday, right before RJ went home, he said, yeah, I'll watch Clay go 1-for-7 from the field tonight. How did that work out for you, Choppy? How does that taste?
Well, I mean, 7 minus 1 is 6. 6 is the amount of three-pointers he made. So I think that's something there.
What?
That's fine.
That's before the champagne.
Yeah, sparkling wine.
That is 116 math.
Hey, you guys be quiet. Corey wants to say something. 116.
I have a question for Choppy because I'm very disappointed.
Yeah, Choppy.
Not in the Clay thing, but this morning while y'all were interviewing McCarthy, he said that Fridays were fast and furious Fridays, and you did not do a Vin Diesel anything. Like you didn't bring it up or anything, and I was very disappointed.
Well, in my defense, I wasn't listening.
Okay.
Right. So that's about where I go there. I didn't hear it.
What do you think would happen if you asked Mike McCarthy if he lived his life a quarter mile at a time?
I don't know that he would have gotten.
No, he probably would.
Maybe he would have. He says Fast the Furious.
Austin Powers.
Yeah.
Yeah. He pulls some references, 20 years ago.
He does. He can pull a good old reference.
Does that with his offense, too.
That fits in great with this organization.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
Hey, Sean, do you see all the TVs behind us? All the TVs?
Yeah.
On Zoom? Hey, Corey, where are we at today?
We are at Buffalo Wild Wings in Grand Prairie, right off of I-20. 2315 I-20 is where we are. So come on out here today. I hear there's a Twolo party going on during the show. Plus, it's a double remote. We got G-Bag flags. Ooh. G-Bag Nation will be out here this afternoon as well. So let's just party all day. Start your weekend early with the KNC Masters.
Now, Sean, I know that you're not a listen to our whole show guy. I know you guys have to get in your naps because you guys wake up so early. Have you guys heard the last 2 days at all of Mike Likes It?
Oh, my dear God.
No.
It has driven Kevin literally insane, but it has maybe been the most liked Mike Likes It in the history of Mike Likes It.
It's according been Mike loves
to? It. Yeah. According to the feedback, unfortunately.
What has it been?
It's been terrible, but people love it. Because, like, so 2 days ago, I asked Mike a question, and he goes, I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. I was getting ready for Mike Likes It. And I was like, okay, great. And then we get into Mike Likes It, and he goes, yeah, I had nothing, so I wanted to look up conversation starters. And then he goes through this, like, 100-point bullet point thing about great ways to start a conversation. Like, if we were a fruit, what kind of fruit would you be?
Oh, my God, that's a great question.
I swear the clock was working backwards while he was talking.
That's much different from, like, what way do you cut your hot dog or sandwich?
It's a hamburger, true. But I appreciate it.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so I didn't have anything for Mike Likes, and I looked up at the clock, and it was 12:30. And that starts at 12:41, and I was like, oh, crap, I forgot to really prepare for Mike Likes It. And I didn't really want to talk sports at the moment.
Yeah.
So I was like, I Googled funny topics to talk about.
It sounds genius to me.
Yeah. Like, and so this article comes up, and it was amazing. And it was like, take a load off.
Mm-hmm.
Relax.
Sit back, relax. When's the last time somebody told you to take a load off?
A Mickey interview.
Take a load off, Fanny.
If you have trouble starting a conversation, here are 100 different ways to start a conversation and get people to laugh.
Yeah.
And it's so funny, like, as in, like, maybe not funny.
Not funny.
But Kevin, what drives you crazy about it?
It was because it was the continual reset. Like, it was an obnoxious reset. It was like we had a guest on that we really liked but nobody had ever heard of. After every point, maybe two, he would go, hey, take a load off and listen to this list every time, and it drove me insane.
I was at the remote yesterday for G-Bag. I ran into badass mofo Lady T, Tasha, nice, from the Twitch, and she was talking about y'all's show, and she's like, yeah, it's so funny, like, when Mike's getting Kevin worked up, and Kevin, like, kind of jokingly snaps and screams, like, there's no joking. Kevin's legitimately angry in that moment.
See, my theory is they don't actually like Mike's content. They just love that it pisses Kevin off. Oh, yeah. It's like me dealing with you guys. Yeah. Like, they don't think you guys are actually funny. They like that I'm getting worked up over the thought that you guys think you're funny.
Yes. So,
but hey, whatever
never
works.
Never thought about that before.
Oh, yeah. They don't think Mike's content is any good. It's that you're losing your mind.
Great.
Yeah, that's what it's like.
I thought the content was great.
It's like, what's that dumb game we used to play? The stupid
sports match.
Yeah, that
it's a great game.
And no one liked the game or thought it was any good. They just liked that I hated it so much, so they wanted to continue to torture me by us playing it. But Mike, I guarantee you, does it again today.
No, I'll tell you what I'm going to do today in Mike Wells.
Oh, hold on. Let's catch everybody up on what happened yesterday. He talked about why Taylor Swift was really with Travis Kelce.
Oh, man.
And then did like another 5 minutes to sit back and relax.
Take a load off.
All right. Do you want me to talk to you guys about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce?
No.
Or do you want me to go on to Maverick Talk?
It's your crosstalk, bro.
Yeah. All right. So real quick. When you really look into Taylor Swift, her thoughts and her attitudes and her beliefs, it doesn't match up at all with Travis Kelce. Like, they are oil and water.
How do we know?
When you really look at it.
How do you know that?
So my belief is, he's kind of, you know, like, I don't really like this term, but let's say he's kind of meatheadish to like,
you don't like
give kind of a term there.
But you're fine with on the spectrum.
I think
holy
that.
Holy moly.
Yeah, he's a meathead.
He's a meathead.
You think she's too smart for him.
But yeah.
Ooh, he's generous.
And just her thoughts and beliefs just don't really line up or kind of lifestyle or stuff like that.
Okay? Mike, do you believe in opposites attract? How opposite? There's no way your wife can be like you.
100%. And thank God she's not.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Hey, farthead, how was your day?
And maybe I'm her Travis Kelce. Yeah. Because I think that Taylor Swift is just wanting a big, strong man right now.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
I think I'm not this whole, you know, subscriber to the woman's going to ruin your career and break you. You sent the audio the other day.
Oh, he's
lifeless.
He's
done. I haven't seen meathead energy from him all year long. His eyes, you can see it in his eyes. I wish I was on the Eras Tour.
Yeah. I had FOMO.
My family.
I was too busy playing San Francisco in a football game.
Yeah.
But I had FOMO of a concert in Miami. He's done. He's checked out.
It is nuts. Like, when you see him so sapped and drained, it's like, wow, why have 25 other big name people broken up with this woman and had albums written about them? Like maybe there's something you got to look at in the mirror.
All right. Now, I'm going to talk about, and Mike likes it, just to preview the show, and you guys can have a comment on this if you'd like. You probably did during the show. I was shocked that Barkley thinks the Mavs are bad this year or below average. It was like the total opposite. Shaq thinks that they could win it all.
Yeah.
And then Barkley thinks that there is 5 to 7 better teams in the Western Conference.
Yeah. Ridiculous. It's like he was too lazy to do the research for this year, so he was right a couple years ago about the run that they had. They did, I felt like, got lucky before losing to the Warriors in the West Finals. But what was lucky about last year's run?
You can't say, I don't believe that there's more than 3 teams better than them in the West.
And that Klay would have zero impact? Like, zero impact? And I like Charles. I love the show, but I thought all that was dumb.
Dude, I don't know if we have Jerry Jones on today or not, but Corey, tell me what's coming up on the show.
We do have Jerry Jones on the show coming up here at 10:30 today. And also, we got 25 flags, jersey, shirts, mini helmets, figurines, and Cowboys tickets courtesy of Miller Lite to give away throughout the day.
And speaking of Jerry Jones, final shout out to the men's club.
Yeah.
We got surprise random tacos and food delivered along with champagne. Showing us support for the Jerry Jones interview.
Paolo.
Shout out Paolo from the Men's Club. Now that's street cred.
Men's
Good
Club Tacos.
Good player. He's at Orlando. Yep.
Yeah.
Paolo Banchero.
Absolutely.
All right. coming up next. Hey, guys, there's only 4 hours left.
Stop doing that.
The KNC Masterpiece. But then after us, we'll have the G-Bag Nation.
Echo, 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 echo. Oh, they fixed it.